On the 6th of October 2021, news emerged that a compromise had been reached between the Premier League, Newcastle United, and the buying consortium for the takeover to go through. On the 7th of October, the takeover of Newcastle United was officially confirmed with the public investment fund, PCP Capital Partners, and the Rubin Brothers. And so on Monumental Day set off a remarkable chain of NUFC events. 12 months later, welcome to Black and White with Arab News. Welcome to another edition of our unique NUFC podcast, and who better to have with us than the leading NUFC journalist and takeover specialist, Liam Kennedy. Before we say hi to him, it's a warm welcome back to our own Arab News sport editor, Ali Khaled, AK, off the back of a fantastic day out in the capital for the Toon Army.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, last week, I at least predicted a draw, thinking, you know, the list of... The series of draw would continue, especially because we thought Fulham were playing so well. In the end, it was a comfortable day for Newcastle. Brilliant performance. I know Fulham went a man down, but as we were discussing before, you know, even before that, you know, Newcastle looked up for it. You know, it was good first 11, like really strong first 11, and the performance was brilliant. No let up, you know, and I think a very welcome win, you know, after that run of draws. And, all positive, you know, on the anniversary.
Game on with that win. A win, less than a win, may have said, people started saying it wasn't the best start to a season, but that win turns it. Welcome back, Liam. Who can believe it's a year already?
Always a pleasure. Never a chore to be on here with you guys. It's been a year. What a year it's been. Absolutely incredible. Beyond the wildest dreams of any Newcastle United fan or anybody who covers the football club, rolling back probably even just a month or two before that. It really has been a transformative, revolutionary year. And it really does kind of feel like we've only seen, we haven't even finished the first chapter. That's what it sort of feels like. And there's been so much change and progress already. You just look at the Premier League table and see where Newcastle United are, the results that they've had since the turnaround in fortunes at the end of the January transfer window, from that Leeds game going back to the end of January. Newcastle United's run of form is Champions League stuff. They've continued in that vein into this season. Of course, they've had some decent fixtures at the start of this season. We've got to go and get results in them. And they had decent fixtures at the start of last season, 12 months ago, and they hadn't won by this point.
Yeah.
Of course, as you mentioned, a good start has been what it's seen as. Could have been better. There's room for improvement, definitely. But really, they're only a 90-odd minute goal away from being unbeaten. And the only other team in the top flight is Man City who are unbeaten this season, I think. So yeah, I think it's fair to say that it's been positive. Too many draws, not enough wins. But it's amazing to be saying that kind of thing when there were a team last season who couldn't buy a win.
And it shows
how much expectations have risen on Tyneside.
Before I go back to Ali, there's something I wanted to, as a Newcastle fan, first and foremost, we both have jobs, which is to report on the club. But as fans, there was something I wanted to bring up with you, which I think is vitally important. And again, it's Eddie Howe and his team that are helping do this. But basically, as Newcastle fans, we've always been, oh, we won't get a result down there. That's the Newcastle way, or that's a bogey team, or I don't fancy this one today. Slowly but surely, Eddie Howe's just... he's getting rid of that feeling, Liam, and I fancy Newcastle wherever they go in the country at the minute.
Yeah, one thing that I would point to is that traditionally, in all the years that I've supported and covered Newcastle United, they've always had a soft underbelly. You can always get it at Newcastle United. There's traditionally a number of clubs in this country. West Ham would be one. Tottenham may be another. They have soft underbellies. If you get at them, you can get results against them. Newcastle United are kind of game by game losing that now. They're a really tough team to beat. Look, There's going to be anomalies in this season, as there was the back end of last season. They went to Tottenham and got hammered. The top teams can't take them apart, but they've played Liverpool and Man City, who were the best two teams in the country last year, maybe not so this year. And they've got good results against them, apart from that, obviously, that last-minute defeat at Liverpool. And I think that's one thing that really strikes to me, is that under Rafa Benitez, Newcastle were tough to beat and could give anybody a game in the Premier League on their day, but lacked any kind of quality. What we've got now is a super, ultra-organised Newcastle United, like they were under Rafa Benitez. I would argue, even possibly slightly more organised and well-drilled under Eddie Howe, with quality. They've got those flashes of quality. And they can go to places like Fulham. Yes, the 10 men helped, but they would have beat them anyway. I'm sure of that. Callum Wilson should 100%. Score after 3 or 4 men. They would have beat them anyway. I'm confident of that. And with that quality, they've went down to Fulham, who it is an easy place to go. It's not always been a happy hunting ground for Newcastle, particularly in the capital. And they've done it without Alan St-Maximin. They've done it with about 2 or 3 other key players. Jonjo Shelvey, it's one thing that I'm not the biggest Jonjo Shelvey fan, but he's the key to unlocking Bruno next to him, as we've seen at the back end of last season. Bruno wants to play as an 8. He doesn't want to play as a defensive midfielder. And I think we see the best football of Bruno's career when he plays as an 8. So yep. There are little bits in this team that can still be improved. And I think that's the really exciting part of the start of the season, is you kind of feel there's a touch of being underwhelmed by some of it. And that's amazing to think that there's still...
There's more to come feeling, isn't there?
Yes.
It's so exciting. It's brilliant. Listen, it is the anniversary, Ali. So I'm going to take you back and ask you, what were you doing when you heard the news, apart from scrambling for a pen to write your Arab news headlines? And also, of course, to get our podcast off the mark, because it's something that we talked about. But in all seriousness, Ali, it was a huge story for the region as well as Newcastle United.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget, this was a story like it had been brewing for a whole year, you know, like we were ready, you know, a year earlier, you know, we were like planning our stories and saying, should it go through? How are we going to follow up? Who are we going to be like speaking to and all that? And you know, then everything got put on hold for almost a year. And then when it did go through, I mean, I remember you asked where I was working, and I just remember like how quickly things developed. You know, suddenly there was like the news came out that, you know, it looks like there's an agreement, and within 24 hours it happened. I think Liam can correct me on that, but it was something like that. It was like a Thursday to a Friday morning, and I just remember it so well. And you know, you and I had discussed the podcast. We had all sorts of like articles, you know, that we, you know, which were ready like a year earlier. Obviously, like we had to rewrite them and all that, but you know, just about what it meant to the club. But also one of the things that we really pushed for is what it meant for, you know, for this part of the world to have a club as big as Newcastle, something that important. Really, like, we wanted to drive home not just what, you know, Saudi Arabia was doing for the club, which is obviously huge and everyone knows what it is, but we also wanted to like to give our readers and people in this part of the world, you know, the knowledge of Newcastle and exactly what kind of club that you're getting.
Absolutely. Well said as well. Okay, gents, I want to look at key milestones from this last 12 months. I'm going to start with you, Liam. Taking stock, is it even possible to put into one answer what it's done for the city and the club, not just football?
Look, so I think you can split into two different areas. And I think one is still pending and the other has been huge development-wise. So you look at the football club itself, it's gone from being a skeleton of a football club to slowly beefing up the infrastructure in terms of personnel behind the scenes, and also improving things like, for example, one of the key moments that I think that defined the last 12 months with regards to the neglect that was the previous 15 years, the idea that there was going to be development at the training ground. That's already well underway, and with plans pending to go and build a purpose-built one, like we see at places like Manchester City and other massive football clubs. So that, for me, is one part of it. The team, of course, comes into that category. It's developed. There's a lot more quality in the squad now after £200 million spent. The manager, much better quality. We now have the likes of Dan Ashworth, who are medium to long-term appointments, who will be building the infrastructure behind the scenes, beefing up the finances that go in towards the academy, which is that when you think of an area that's produced generational talents, you know, going back to the Charltons who won the World Cup with England, Bobby Charlton, Jackie Charlton, Paul Gascoigne, Peter Beardsley. These are Alan Shearer, that legendary English legendary footballers produced in this area. And that's something that isn't tapped in this area. It a lot of the footballers who are good at the age of 12, 13, 14 play for Sunderland or play for Middlesbrough. Newcastle United have always missed that talent. I believe now that won't happen. That's one of the biggest developments for me, is that this isn't just about the short term. Everybody looked at this takeover and said, the takeover to end all takeovers. They will plow so much money in and they'll just buy everybody on the market. They've actually done it really cleverly and they're building for the medium and long term. This looks very much like in the first year. This isn't a flash in the pan. It's not a 2-year project, a 3-year project. This is a 10 to 15 year project, which is the most promising thing about the whole thing. Because that's what Newcastle United has lacked. It's got a lot of the key components to be a major force in English football. But what it's always been lacking is an ownership model and the finances to back that up. Now that's all in place. And there's a really clever set of people being appointed to the football club who want to push it in the right direction. That's probably not going to be the flash in the pan moment that you think I would say about a takeover. But I think the medium to long-term planning and infrastructure being put in place now is the most positive thing about it all.
Fantastic. When you look at it, how far it's come in just 12 months is phenomenal. Ali, Eddie's recently been rewarded with a new deal, and there was growing chat, obviously, when Southgate doesn't do well at international level, they start looking for young English managers. So naturally, Eddie Howe has been linked with the England job post-World Cup. But let's go back to the beginning of when he was appointed. There was a few eyebrows raised when he was hired because he was not first choice.
Yeah, I mean, I remember at the time, Pete, I think, was it Unai Emery was one of the names. There was a few others as well. I wouldn't look too much into that, even if he wasn't. I mean, I don't think it's too much of an issue in the sense that, or shouldn't have been too much of an issue at the time. Because, I mean, you know, you would imagine it was such a, you know, it was a massive takeover. You know, you would imagine Newcastle aren't just speaking to one person. I mean, that would be, you know, it would be like crazy to think that they'd only like, they have one person, you know, at any one time and then go like, down a list. I think they would have like probably spoken to quite a few people at the same time. Yes, sure, there might have been someone who's a slightly higher priority. In the end, it didn't matter. I think he's come in, he's done a fantastic job, an absolutely perfect fit. You couldn't have like, you know, found a more perfect fit for the club. You know, and I think, you know, the stuff, just very quickly, the stuff about England, I think is nonsense. I mean, I think it would be, you know, an awful decision, regardless of what you think of Southgate. You know, I'm just saying it would be terrible decision to actually change less than a month before the World Cup anyway, or like, you know, after their last international break. And as for after that, I don't think Eddie Howe, you know, I really don't see how Eddie Howe would entertain it. You know, he's got such a good project. He's done an amazing job. He's being backed. And I think he'll stick it out.
Liam?
Just to add to that, Eddie Howe was very clear when he spoke at a press conference within the last fortnight when it was first suggested to him that the England job for him is something that he would love to do, but not in the short to medium term, because Newcastle United is something that he's got everything you would want as a job. He's got all the tools ready to produce a top club and to go levels as a manager that he hasn't been before. I think would he then consider international management? What I would quickly say is that international management, that isn't the pinnacle anymore. Club football and top jobs in European football have massively overtaken the idea. The idea of being England manager in this country was something anybody would have left any job to do. Now it's a 30 to 40 days a year job where you're working for that period of time. A lot of managers want to be there day to day doing the stuff on the training ground, and Eddie Howe's one of those.
Absolutely. Staying with leaders, Liam, we talked about Eddie on the touchline. How important is Trippier as a leader on the pitch? The first piece of the jigsaw.
Absolutely massive. Not only on the pitch and off the pitch, he's an incredible, incredible signing. And he was the signing that kicked all this off in January. That will be another one of my key moments, that he was the player who believed. He was the one who came through the door and opened the doors for others. Because when Kieran Trippier signed, it almost then became, all right, okay. Other players started to take notice and say, maybe we won't go there. Yeah, of course. He was the first, and I think he'll be here for quite some time as well, because he's shown that he's one of the best right backs in this country. It's no surprise why Gareth Southgate rates him so highly. He's probably also one of the best left backs in the country, even though he's not left footed. He's an incredible, incredible footballer with an amazing attitude, and that's one thing that Eddie Howe loves about him, is that he's like a leader on the pitch and off it. Even when he wasn't playing last season, when he got that injury, he was on the touch lines and he was making sure he was like a second manager. And I think that's one thing that really, really, really ranks him highly. among not only the fans, but the management team there as well.
I'm keen to move on from fullbacks, having Ali Khaled on from Liverpool. So we'll move swiftly on about international fullbacks at the moment. Ali, we talk about pivotal moments in Newcastle's season, but in all seriousness, for me, I believe the training camp in our KSA is right up there.
Yeah, I mean, I've said time and again since the start of the year, that win against Leeds, for me, was the turning point. Probably the turning point would have happened, could have happened before, you know, might have happened like the match after.
It might not have, though.
But they were really on the limits, you know, and I'm sure Liam would agree with me. You know, they were running out of time, you know, that turning point needed to come, you know. Few more games and maybe the turning point wouldn't have happened in the same way. I mean, like maybe the
performance
would have been, but they might not have been enough at the end of the season.
You were saying that on every podcast. You were saying...
I said we've run out of time. You know?
We've run out of time. So yeah,
we've run out of time now. You know, like had the turning point come three matches later or four matches later, yes, the performance might have improved, as might have the results, but that might not have been enough at the end of the season. You know, they might not have gotten the momentum. The way it happened, they got that. I remember the Jonjo Shelby free kick against Leeds at Elland Road. That, for me, that win changed everything. They went off to Saudi Arabia straight after that match, and the mood in the camp was just fully positive. I remember we spoke to Eddie Howe. He looked relaxed. He looked confident. The players, worked really hard in Saudi Arabia as well. Like they, you know, in the humidity and all that, improved their fitness. Went back, and then after that, they went on that great run. 6 wins out of 8. I think 2 draws, if I remember correctly, something along those lines. So that trip to Saudi Arabia, like, was, you know, again, like you say, pivotal, as you say. But it's the win just before that against Leeds for me that changed everything.
Okay, Liam, something else I wanted to mention, which is back to off the pitch, sort of. It's the credit, in the credit stakes for me, I've got to hand it to War Flags. They've changed the atmosphere in the stadium. Yes, you need a successful team and a team that's trying, we know that. But it goes hand in hand, doesn't it? Because I know that the players feed off the crowd and the crowd feed off the players. And when you look at it, and you see other teams as well with their flags, you just think, wow, what an absolutely huge contribution this group of people have made to St James's Park.
Yeah, I was just looking back over, whether it been a year, on my NewcastleWorld.com content from that day. And one of the first stories that I published was War Flags are coming back, because they were such a huge part of this Newcastle United match day experience. Of course, totally fan-funded. You see a lot of displays around the country where the club will put stuff down for people to wave and things like that. This is all paid for by the fans for the fans, and it's so organic, and they build these amazing, incredible displays that are loaded across the country. But the players do feed off that. I've spoken to players who said, look, it makes a huge difference to us seeing the fans. And I think that's one of the recent home games. There's been sort of lulls and difficulties with that, and haven't, obviously, the Queen passing away, they haven't been able to do these displays. It has kind of had a bit of an impact on performances at St James's Park. But I know they've got something big planned for this weekend, with it being a year on from the day that everything changed. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Me too. Just big shout out to our people in Dubai as well, where it's spun off here, Ali, the Newcastle United Dubai Supporters Club. All got flags. That's gone up from 4 or 5 people watching there on a Saturday afternoon to 70 Newcastle United people, fans from Dubai. And they've got flags, and they play local hero before the game. So it's like a mini St. James's over here in Dubai. So That's brilliant. To those guys. Yeah, I'll send you some of the pictures. It's absolutely phenomenal, and they love it. People are just waiting for Saturday to come around, which is how it should be. Ali, on the pitch, you just pinpointed that Leeds game and Shelby's goal. Speaking of Jonjo, his absence really recently, it's proven how pivotal he is to the team, because they are missing Shelby.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I would say a year ago, I wouldn't have said that. A year ago, I was of the view that a lot of the players had underachieved, even before the takeover. Yes, you know, Steve Bruce didn't play attacking football. Yes, you know, there was like a lot of negativity. But even taking that into account, I thought a lot of players should have been playing at a higher level, and maybe, you know, they should have won a couple of games. And but he stepped up massively. And Liam mentioned it earlier. I think, you know, from a tactical point of view, when he plays, you know, it allows possibly, you know, like Bruno to have a slightly different role, maybe a slightly more attacking role, you know. So in that sense, you know, he's like, it's, you know, it's not just what he brings to the team, it's how the rest of the team like plays when he play, when he's in that. I think obviously I think we can say that Bruno now is probably the most important player in the team, you know. I mean, I know obviously Callum Wilson and all that, but Bruno is like is sort of the pivot that everything goes through. But absolutely, I think Jonjo Shelvey, you know, ever since that goal, you know, which turned things around, he's played such an important role. And listen, you know, most importantly, the manager himself, Eddie Howe, appreciates what he brings to the team, you know. And, you know, who am I to argue with Eddie Howe?
No, who's anyone to argue with Eddie Howe? On that note, Liam, I just wanted to say as well, we talk about Shelvey. Let's talk about Alan, Alan St-Maximin as well. Hopefully you're going to give us some news. He must be near a return. And also with Callum Wilson back, things look a lot brighter on the injury front.
Yeah, as I was talking before, Newcastle have managed to get results without the amount of talent that isn't playing. Shelvey, St-Maximin mentioned there. Well, that's without even mentioning Alexander Isak, who is injured as well at the moment. The club's record signing. But Callum Wilson makes such a huge difference. He knows exactly where the team plays. He's not the biggest of guys, but he's got everything. He's physical. He's quick. He's a good finisher. He can win the ball in the air. He can hold it up. He can do everything you want of an English centre forward. And I would argue probably Ivan Toney may have gone past him in terms of his achievements recently. But I don't think there's many other better English number nines out there. Apart from probably Harry Kane, he's probably just a bit old and probably can't be relied upon injuries wise to be taken in an England squad, which is a shame for him really, because he's a 25 game, probably plays 25 games in a season and he always gets double figures. He's a top class forward. But Alan St-Maximin is one of the only ones in this squad who can really unlock a door. And even when he's not actually playing well, he frustrates the life out of me when he's playing sometimes, but it's amazing when he's not there how much you miss him. And Newcastle really have missed him, having that flash of quality, ability to just do something like he did with his last kick for Newcastle United against Wolves and produce a moment of absolute magic. But special shout out to Miguel Almiron in recent weeks. Look, I've been one of his harshest critics at sometimes because of that output. I know Ali agrees with that as well. Not enough goals, not enough assists.
Yeah.
But he's done it recently, so you can't argue with a lad. He's stepped up to the plate in the absence of Alan St-Maximin and really managed to produce some magic himself. Because that goal at Craven Cottage last week, I was there, was one of the best goals I've ever seen in black and white. The technique to finish that one after Bruno's flick over the top.
And none of you or your colleagues came in with beautiful South, a perfect 10 for Miggy. Go on, Ali.
Yeah,
I thought he'd shinned it, you know. I thought he'd shinned it at first.
Actually, I'm glad Liam mentioned about Almiron, that I had my doubts and all that. Well, I mean, it wasn't so much doubts, it was just like criticism of him and Alan St-Maximin that they were not contributing enough. And I think the game against Fulham was the perfect response, you know, like not just, from Almiron, but from the whole team, you know, like obviously Alan wasn't playing, but just that's the perfect performance, you know. A game you should win, certainly after like the sending off, you know. But they, as you say, you know, they were flying before that anyway, and they probably would have won it. And there was no let up. Everybody contributed, and you know, this is exactly what you want. You know, like you know, your top scorer gets a goal, or your best centre forward, but then you're getting also like a couple of goals from elsewhere, three goals from elsewhere. That was the perfect response to the slight criticism that, you know, there wasn't. More contribution.
No, just as well, Ali. To be fair, I don't think it was unjust criticism. I think that what I do love is the wavelength that Bruno and Miggy seem to have established between each other, which is great. Liam, any on the ground team news selection issues for Eddie that you can share with us ahead of the weekend's game?
So I think the suggestion that I've heard is that Maximin is going to be back. So I think that's going to be a really interesting decision he's going to have to make in the final third. Obviously, Jacob Murphy played. Ryan Fraser's flattered to deceive largely in that position again this season, unfortunately. So I would think, having had at least he trained one day last week, trained a full week this week, I think we'll see Alan St-Maximin straight back in the starting lineup.
And a prediction for the game?
I think it's going to be really tough because I think I do like Brentford, and I really like the job that Thomas Frank's doing there and the transfer policy. I think it's a really well-built, well-established club. It's got a real chance, Brentford, I think. I was just driving past there last weekend and looking at it, the infrastructure they have, they've got a real chance of establishing themselves as a Premier League feeder club, somebody that plenty of people will want to sign for because it's in a great location and they do things the right way. I think it's going to be tough. I think Newcastle and I might just squeeze this one, though, but I think it'll be 2-1.
2-1. Ali, last word, as always, with yourself on the anniversary of the takeover and the Middle East World Cup. It's an exciting region to be a football fan at the moment.
Absolutely, mate. It's brilliant. And it has been. It's great for us. You know, we're approaching our one-year anniversary on the podcast as well. And we're going to be having a World Cup podcast, Arab News, as well. So very exciting stuff. But that's going to start soon. More news on that later. But I just think, we're all looking forward to the World Cup. Things are going great at Newcastle. I think people in Saudi Arabia are very excited. I think more and more people really properly follow Newcastle now. Not just, we bought this club. There's a slight interest. I think there's, the fan club is growing. People are going to watch the games. They're setting up screenings. More people buy the shirt, more people, ask me about traveling to Newcastle to go watch games and all that. I think it's like momentum is gaining, and obviously Saudi Arabia are playing in the World Cup as well. We'll be looking at that. Not just Saudi Arabia, three other Arab teams as well in Tunisia, Morocco and Qatar, of course. So plenty to talk about. And, I was just thinking, I agree with Liam. I think it's going to be tough against Brentford, who have been very good. I do think I was going to go 2-1 as well, but you know what? I was just thinking it's the anniversary. The crowd's going to be, as they always are, but they're going to be up for it. And if Alan Saint-Maximin comes back, I'm going to go 3-1.
I'll take either of those scores from today's guests. As always, Liam, absolutely brilliant to see you. Hope that you enjoy the weekend as we all do in black and white. Can't wait to hear back from you and see you soon. Ali, as always, great to see you. We'll catch up with you next week, and very excited about our World Cup podcast as well. That's it for another edition, an anniversary edition of Black and White with Arab News. How are the lads?